This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Hello, I'm Laura Linney, and this is Men in Blazers. Come to a room where two men live for hours at a time, where they together, in a communal, loving, brotherly sort of way, discuss the joys, passion, heartbreak, and courage of soccer, football, and pie.
From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast. Laura Linney.
Laura Linney.
I wasn't on the Twitter last night after she appeared on the Men in Blazers show on NBC Sports Network, who are very pleased with themselves today, I would say. More about that later. But how was the reaction in GFOP Nation, Rog, to Laura Linney?
Not good.
Oh, no.
It's the first time we've ever actually had anything totally 100% optimal.
Yeah.
On our show.
You mean Laura Linney was optimal?
She's almost... I mean, she is an Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
We are Garth and Wayne.
Yeah.
And we are most definitely, Davo, we are not worthy.
So what, people didn't like her?
They just thought we were besmirching her.
Oh, exactly.
Just tarnishing
it was
her.
Bad. They didn't understand what Laura Linney was doing on our show.
Had we taken a hostage?
Yeah.
Was it a hostage kind of situation? I mean, she is. I have to tell you, her image in the media is of a wondrous, remarkable human being.
Yeah.
In person, she's 10 times that.
I know. It doesn't go far. Her image does not go far enough to explain just how lovely she actually
is. Just mentally picture, if Julie Andrews, close your eyes, if Julie Andrews and Mother Teresa had a baby.
Yeah, it wouldn't be as good as Laura Linney.
Probably not.
No.
But what a way for us to kick off the English Premier League season, David.
Yeah.
With PBS masterpiece tweeting at us, # crap gold.
No, really? Oh, that's publicly funded. I don't know how I feel about that.
We've got Guy Ritchie up next, David.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie.
Yep, the male Laura Linney.
That's amazing. He just got married, Guy Ritchie.
He did.
Rog.
Can't wait to talk to him about when it's right to wear no socks and when it's not right. He wore no socks at his wedding.
Yeah.
I'm excited to talk to him about that and balding.
Okay. Very, very good.
I love that we're back, though. The Premier League's back.
We are back.
You know how I know the Premier League's back?
How?
You've shaved your legs for the new season.
I have not shaved my legs for the new season. Anybody who's seen pictures of me on Instagram knows that I haven't shaved my legs. I've not shaved my legs. They've seen my legs a lot.
They're shiny.
But I've not shaved them.
Oh, they are shiny.
I've not shaved them. I don't shave a lot of things, Rog. There's a little bit of detail around the beard and around the neck, but I don't shave a lot.
Why were you pointing to your down below?
That's just you taking advantage of the fact that this is not a video podcast.
Talking about hair, though, David.
Oh, hair,
the
Rog.
Republican debate.
Didn't know that's where you were going with that.
The Republican. It's all anyone's talking about after
Can
the
Can I tell
Republican
you something
debate?
About the Republican debate? I'm also at a disadvantage here because you know very well that I listened to the Republican debate when I was in my car coming back from Long Island, and I didn't see it at all. I only heard it on the radio.
Well, then you couldn't have possibly got anything out of it. Because
it
wasn't about
brilliant
words.
Radio show.
It wasn't about words.
There were some good words.
And it wasn't about interactions between the panel and the host.
Questioners.
Yeah, the questioners.
The interlocutors.
Here's what I look for when I look at all these political debates, Democratic and Republican.
Yeah.
When you talk to political consultants, David,
as
I do on a daily basis. In the telegenic kind of post-Kennedy age, they all say there's only one truth in politics.
Yeah.
There can never, ever, in this country, be a bald president.
Has there ever been a bald president?
Well, I'm sure there has. Many of them, I think.
Yeah.
But the way before they did televised debates, America don't trust baldies.
Yeah.
And it's why all the candidates go to such ridiculous lengths to conceal the truth. I mean, just look at, was it Thursday night? The staggering array of approaches to male pattern baldness, which for me is ultimately far more interesting and revealing than the intricacies of policy or the political battle. Look at the runners. You've got Scott Walker.
Yeah.
He's got Wayne Rooney's 99 problems. Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Looks like a man who has scalped Louis Van Gaal, then permed his shock of hair to try and mask his crime before plopping it down on his head.
Yeah.
And Trump, David.
Yeah.
I don't know how you'd describe that.
Rubio's got good hair.
He's got great hair.
I'm avoiding answering any questions about Trump, just like every other Republican candidate.
He looks like a man, Dave, that's marched into his barbers and asked him to cut his hair just like Branislav Ivanovich's.
Yeah.
I mean, old Ivanovich, we met him Yeah. We met him in the Barcelona game. He's got problems in all sectors.
Yeah.
During the coin toss at the Barcelona game.
I've never been more
game.
Convinced that someone has ethnically cleansed people than when I shook Branislav Ivanovic's hand. It was the coldest look of death that went into my eyes. And I love him. I properly love Branislav Ivanovic. It was the coldest look of a killer that I've ever been given by another man.
I didn't look in his eyes.
Father.
I couldn't take my eyes off his hairline.
Yeah.
His hair looked like the fluff on a rotting peach. It's fun. It's kidding. Yeah, we have a good time.
Less of it.
Another great moment on television.
One second. I do believe that Donald Trump... I know that people like talking about Donald Trump's hair not being real. I actually do believe it's real. And I've met Donald Trump a few times... Met him up close and personal. I've never got the impression that that is either a wig or a comb over. And I believe I know from rugs and comb overs. I just think it's something more remarkable than that. It's an extraordinary hair choice, style choice of the way a man should wear his hair.
Is it self-conscious? Is he in on the joke?
Are we talking just about his hair? Are we talking about everything? I don't believe this is a man who is so confident. I think he's an amazing study, Donald Trump. I think he's an amazing study in manhood. He is so confident in himself, in what he looks like, in who he is, in his net worth, in his businesses, in his taste. You've never heard a man talk more about his taste than Donald Trump. He just has no self-doubt whatsoever. No self-doubt. And I sort of admire that. I don't admire everything about the man, but I sort of admire that element of his personality.
It's a very small category of men. Put Jose Mourinho in there. If you spend time with him, you realize the thing you admire, whether you love him or you hate him, the thing you have to admire, I believe, about Jose Mourinho is how hard he works, just how hard he works at projecting utter sheer confidence at all times.
And I'm sure Trump does the same thing. I'm sure
utterly exhausting. It's a 24. I put Louis van Gaal in that.
Yeah.
I think half of the way, whether he's tactically smart, whether there's a plan there, a vision or not, the thing you have to admire is how he has slapped the English media completely at arm's length. Whereas at David Moyes, they were just absolutely steamrolling.
You're not even allowed to ask van Gaal about any of the transfer dealings going on with that. It's none of your business. It's not your business as a journalist.
One of the great moments of the weekend was when a journalist asked him about David De Gea, to which Louis van Gaal replied,
"It's none from your business."
And then there was a awkward 5-second beat, to which the journalist just said, "Fair point, Louis van Gaal. Yeah, I'm not meant to ask the hard questions." And that utter confidence.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you, when you say a fascinating study in masculinity, I literally... As a broken man, I feel like I'm a completely different sex to Donald Trump. A third way, a third sex.
I think most American men, most international men believe that. I mean, people always say, like, oh, if you could have anybody to dinner, if you could have a dinner with anybody in the world, people say, oh, Jesus Christ and Mother Teresa.
Laura Linney.
Two shout-outs for Mother Teresa in one podcast. I don't think that's ever happened before.
We normally have three or four.
Exactly.
Just two.
But honestly, you just mentioned Jose Mourinho, Louis van Gaal and Donald Trump. What a dinner that would be.
You missed an adjective. What an awful dinner.
that would be an amazing dinner.
Roger, I would love that dinner. Terrible dinner.
Oh, I could go to Wings.
I prefer to have a dinner with...
That would be amazing.
I would prefer to have a dinner with Dana Plato, Philip Larkin and Charles Bukowski.
Yeah, they're all dead, Rog. I think he's an interesting study in masculinity, but at the very least, I do believe that's real hair.
Oh, talking about masculine role models that I do actually emotively connect to. Farewell, John Stewart.
Oh, farewell, John Stewart.
16 years.
Yeah.
What a life.
Yeah.
What a legacy. What a bloke. Stephen Colbert's toast. Tears.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to overstate from a television point of view what John Stewart did for cable late night talk shows and their wider social political impact. I mean, I've always felt somewhat guilty about this, but I'll tell you very, very quickly my history with Jon Stewart. This has been written about, is that circa 2001, 2002, I'd say, I played a very famous game of golf with our friend Lloyd Braun at Riviera. Lloyd. And on the ninth hole, and this has been, Bill Carter wrote a book about this, it's heavily featured in the book, he said to me, "I'm making an offer to Jon Stewart to be our new late night star on ABC." We want to, like, you know, make some changes in late night. Nightline was there. ABC was the only network that didn't have a late night talk show. Want to make a big offer. We're going to make it to Jon Stewart. And he told me the number he was offering to Jon Stewart. And my head almost exploded.
Premier League number, was it?
Premier League renewal for 6 years number. I had run ABC Late Night. That had been a former job I'd had in the 1990s. And I immediately did the math in my head. It didn't take very long. I carried the one, carried another two, and realized that they were about to lose millions and millions and millions of dollars if they made that offer to Jon Stewart.
It's Trevor Noah money.
And I said, you've got to go after... The only thing that will work on ABC is you've got to, like, leave Nightline where it is. You've got to put a show on later. And you've got to, like, find a host at a different part of their career who you can build for the long term on ABC.
Like Urkel.
And he said, like who? And I said, if you could put anybody on ABC Late Night, who would it be? And I said, Jimmy Kimmel. And Jimmy, who I'd done Wim Benstein's Money with, I'd worked on The Man Show, on the development of that show, I said, Jimmy Kimmel. Lloyd, and he's admitted this, had no idea who Jimmy Kimmel was that afternoon. I sent him a tape of Jimmy Kimmel on Late Night with David Letterman. It was Jimmy's first ever appearance on Late Night and on The Late Show, and he just loved it. Lloyd loved it. Next thing, goes upstairs to all the big executives at Disney ABC, to Bob Iger. Next thing, they make an offer, and they make a deal with Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel and Jon Stewart share the same agent. So, of course, when Jon Stewart, who thought he was getting a massive offer from ABC to go and be a late-night talk show host, he wants to know from his agent what happened, why didn't it happen, to which he was told, well, Michael Davies convinced Lloyd to go with Jimmy Kimmel instead. Now, the positive way of looking at that, which I've always wanted to look at, is, you know what? Jon Stewart didn't leave Comedy Central. He didn't go and do a watered-down version of his brilliant, hard-hitting, political, like, on-message, able to say whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted on The Daily Show. He never left to go and make a watered-down version of that on ABC. But I'm not sure at the time that Jon Stewart was particularly happy with Davo about convincing Lloyd Braun, convincing ABC to go another direction. I've always felt guilty about it because it's not that I didn't think he was brilliant. I've thought he's brilliant forever. Just economics just didn't make any sense.
You made Jimmy Kimmel.
I didn't make Jimmy Kimmel. Only one person made Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel made Jimmy Kimmel.
You made Jimmy Kimmel.
No, I didn't.
And then you saved Jon Stewart. Two great
actors. I didn't save Jon Stewart. And I don't think Jon Stewart sees it that way.
And you got Carl Martino on the Travel Channel.
I had nothing to do with Carl Martino getting on the Travel Channel.
No, I'm just trying to put in an unbelievably quick plug for Carl Martino's new Travel Channel show, which is called...
Dave-O had nothing to do...
36 hours!
Dave-O had nothing to do with Carl Martino getting a show on the Travel Channel.
36 hours with Carl Martino. I need more.
It's based on the New York Times...
But I need more than 36 hours with Carl. I crave him. By the way, were you on the golf course today?
You spend the first 25 hours just looking for Carl Martino and 36 hours with Carl Martino.
Were you today on the golf course and Lloyd Braun and Lloyd said, I'm going to make Jimmy Kimmel? And you'd be, don't Jimmy Kimmel. Go with this young talent, Carl Martino. Don't think about it. Just say yes.
Yeah.
I can't say
I love Carl Martino.
Amidst the tsunami of coverage on Jon Stewart's farewell, my favourite piece, Michael Lewis, BigAppleSoccer.com. Mm-hmm. He wrote about not Jon Stewart, the television host.
He's a big soccer fan.
Stewart, the soccer player, or John Leibovitz, the soccer player, at William and Mary. He was once a powerful winger known as Lebo.
Yeah,
what a great nickname, Lebo. And there's a beautiful photograph. You may have seen it. It's quite a well-known photo of John Lebo. Jon Stewart, young Jon Stewart, just pushing the ball down the wing, barrel-chested. He's got the thighs of Eden Hazard, the shorts of Alexis Sanchez, the crotch of Idris Elba, the hair, well, of Stephen Hunt.
But he does look like a soccer player. He's a perfect sort of midfield,
He's got, but still the face of Jon Stewart, a man of passion, doing the things as always he has, what he loves, and football has never looked more the pursuit of the right outsider than in that photograph. Never more the sport of the future. Oh, tears, Dave. Let's talk about something neither of us care about, the football.
Yeah, we got a packed show, Rog. We're going to celebrate the Premier League's return by breaking down Arsenal's shock loss to West Ham at the Emirates, Chelsea's shock draw with Swansea at Stamford Bridge, and United's shock, ugly, but utilitarian win over Spurs on Louis van Gaal's birthday, Rog. But before we get to the football, Rog, NBC made a little transaction yesterday.
They did? I've not heard about it.
Yeah, they have renewed, Rog, the Premier League. The Premier League is staying on NBC and various other NBC-owned networks, NBCSN, USA, Sci-Fi, Bravo, Oxygen, that one for kids. I think it's called Sprout. It's going to stay on their networks for 6 years beyond this season, Roger.
We have to say.
Yeah.
And that's all the way through to the 2021-2022 season.
Oh, I'll be long gone by then, Rog.
We have to say, there was quite an emotional roller coaster yesterday because there was an early breaking report, a little ahead of the gun, that announced that Fox, ESPN, and I think Univision have combined together to claim a 6-year hold on the English Premier League.
Yeah.
And when David and I looked at it, it broke out over Twitter.
Yeah.
We were both like, unemployed again.
Exactly. There we go.
We had about 25 minutes where we just kind of sat there. We felt very Spanish.
Done.
Felt very, very done. And then Richard Sandomir, I think of the New York Times, was like, no, NBC have collared it.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, brave new world, David. Yeah. Brave magic news. I think magic news for NBC.
Yeah.
Magic news for football in America.
Yeah.
Rebecca Lowe, the two Robbies, Kyle and Arlo, they are truly doing the Lord's work. And the gentleman behind the nuanced touch with which they broadcast, Pierre Moussa, the producer, who I think is a bona fide a translational genius.
Yeah.
Lovely things that Richard Scudamore, the chairman, I guess the Roger Goodell, but nice, of the Premier League. He said it was competitive. There was lots of interest. He said the clubs are extremely pleased. NBC have taken it, embraced it, and taken it to new levels. Everything they've done, we deal with broadcasters around the world, and no one does as good a job of promoting the Premier League as NBC. And I've got to say, going around the English Premier League clubs, as I have over the past year when we've been making these films, almost all of the PR directors, they all say they wish everyone around the world broadcast like NBC. So congratulations, John Miller, Mark Lazarus, Magic.
Everybody over there who worked on that bit obviously did really well. Look, we should say that we work for NBC, but we actually respect what everybody's doing in US television with soccer. It's never been in a better place. What Fox did with the Women's World Cup, when nobody said they could, they did an amazing job. ESPN have been there, you know, long before anybody else in soccer.
Ray Hudson.
Being producer JW spent all weekend watching the championship highlights and the championship and League One, League Two highlights on BN this weekend. It's an amazing place that soccer is. I think NBC deserved to win this, and they obviously deserved it, not just for the quality. They paid, it's been reported, between $800 million and $1 billion. For this, and I'm sure the numbers were just about that high.
Yeah, apparently because of that, there's no austerity budget. Our panic room is going to be shrunken by half.
even smaller.
The memos come through, smaller. It's austerity.
Yeah, it is very clear, we should say, to people who are confused, we have not been renewed for 6 years at anything like $800 million to $1 billion. This number is not hitting the men in blazers.
Yeah, when it comes to us, every silver lining has a dark cloud. And the prospect of men in blazers been around for the next couple of years. I know how frankly appalling it is to so many of you. We remain NBC Football's dark cloud. And I'll just say on that note, Dave, to all GFOPs, save the date, November 13 and 14. That's all we'll say. Just save the date. Something lovely is about to happen.
I didn't know you were going to say that.
Just save the date.
Oh, just save the date. You're not saying what's going to happen on that date.
I don't actually know what's going to happen. Just save the date.
You're just saying November 13, 14. Are we talking 2015?
Yeah.
Okay. November 13th and 14th, 2015. It's a weekend. Save that date.
Save the date.
I need to save the date.
Save the bloody date, Dave.
Producer JW, can you make sure I save that date? Okay, we'll save that date. Okay, Rog, to the football. To the Guinness.
Thank God. Thank God football's back, Dave.
Let's give it a tap. Let's crack it.
Thank God Guinness for breakfast on Saturday is back.
Oh, you didn't tap that enough. Oh, yes, you did. Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, but it's in the glass. Very, very well done, Roger. You didn't spill a drop once again. Cheers, Rog.
Oh, to my Arlo White sex doll voodoo idol, to which I have been burning candles.
It's not a sex doll. Can we restate that? It's not a sex doll. Yesterday it was a gnome.
It is what I call it. Okay. How I use it. Cheers.
Cheers, Rog. Okay, we're now 1/38. Of the way through the Premier League season. Rog, I love 1/38. It doesn't reduce. It doesn't even mean very much.
I was happy when it was 0/38. I want to go on record.
And anyone who tells you it's too early to look at the table doesn't support Leicester, Palace or West Ham.
I mean, we keep saying the Premier League day, Dave, it's like Christmas Day, Rosh Hashanah, Churchill Day, Secretary's Day, crushed into one. And not just because we get to see Rebecca Lowe again, but how?
Mummy.
Oh, Mummy. I've been lost. I've been wandering in the wilderness around Mummy in our life.
I wouldn't have thought she'd come on back in with the black and white dress. I was convinced she was going to go with the blue.
You were shocked.
Or the blue and the
red.
Yeah, it looked like there was plenty of room for a sponsor on the front of that. But she went with the black and white.
Sponsor.
She went with the black and white on the first day of the season.
As I lit my Arlo White voodoo idol / sex doll candle, Dave, here's what I realised on the eve of the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
Just how delusional my dreams of top four glory are. Indeed, top four glory for any fan bar those of the big four.
Uh-huh.
Sad naps. That's all that will predominate for us here on in. Having said that, this was one of the most unpredictable opening weekends of all time.
Yeah.
We all knew English football would be dominated by the big four.
Mm-hmm.
We had no idea that by Sunday night there'd be Leicester City, Crystal Palace, West Ham and Newcastle.
Until Monday.
Premier League writers. Why would anyone play fantasy football when the real thing is so what is this world twisted? And I guess the core theme that we're seeing already week one, why not snap judgments, Davey?
Yeah.
This is a season in which every team is deeply flawed.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the mid-level teams have used the vat of TV money, which has just been added to by America, the fleshy wallets of. For football, this is what's crazy. They've used all this money for football purposes rather than just trying to seduce models on piles of cash.
Yeah.
In the 70s and 80s, teams would often win the title while losing 7 or 8 games along the way. I've got a feeling this is going to be a season that will follow in that vein.
This is a league, Rog, and the beauty of a league with no playoffs is that the league should be competitive top to bottom, including a large middle. And it does feel like we're going to get a league this year, Rog, a proper league.
A league in a deep voice.
A league, a league. I'm looking forward to the league this season. Okay, Fitchcow, let's go up to Manchester, to Old Trafford, to the theatre.
First game of the season.
Of dreams, the early kickoff, Rog. Man United 1, Tottenham 0. Who needs Memphis Schweinsteiger and Schneiderlin when Kyle Walker will score for you, Rog? The Spurs defender turned the ball into his own net. I actually think that needs something larger than turn the ball. He aimed and kicked it right into the corner, Rog, in the 22nd minute for the game's lone goal. Despite creating some quality chances, Spurs never found a way past United keeper Sergio Romero, who Louis van Gaal started in place of David De Gea. Amid speculation, the Spaniard is departing Old Trafford and was not emotionally ready, Rog.
Are we ever emotionally ready, David?
I'm never emotionally ready, Rog.
I've got to say, as a spectacle, the return was all a bit about easing ourselves into our lukewarm bath.
Yeah.
I mean, the big talking point, as you allude to, United drop David De Gea, the Real Madrid transfer tour won't dissipate.
Yeah.
And a solemn LVG pronounced, a player is also a human being. we have to see who
starts.
That's
one of the most rational things that Louis van Gaal has ever said.
Yeah, it's like he's just realised that himself. They are human beings. And then he stumbled as he explained why. He said, we've tried everything with David to get him ready, which makes the mind immediately flash to electroshock therapy and waterboarding in the Old Trafford locker room.
I wouldn't put it past the Dutchman.
He said, but it's not good for him or for us. At Peter Hull tweeted, how is it even possible that Van Gaal's English has got even worse over the summer? I have to say, this goalkeeper thing, Dave, I don't know what you think. It's terrible management. Everyone saw this train wreck coming.
Yeah. Although, I mean, look, to take the other side, I sort of quite like what Louis van Gaal is doing. It feels like he's standing up to Real Madrid and he's saying that we own the player right now. You've got to give us fair value for the player. You've got into the player's head. Frankly, David De Gea has been acting since the end of last season like he's going. But not so fast, mate. We still own you and still we're given. We have to pay a lot for our players when we buy players from the big clubs. You're going to have to pay a lot for him too. And we're not letting him go just because he's unhappy and he's not emotionally ready.
I understand
ready.
That part of it, Davey. But a team who've spunk $370 million but have not nailed down their goalkeeper position, it's mind-boggling. You have De Gea, Andres Lingardegaard, Victor Valdez and Sam Johnston on their books.
Yeah.
There's that great shot of the first three sitting glumly in the stands watching the game.
Yeah.
Hoping that Sergio Romero cocked up badly. Mm-hmm. Victor Valdez has evidently not been given a club suit or a tie.
Yeah.
Also, they removed the tie, possibly to humiliate him, possibly to prevent him on the suicide watch. It depends if he's still got his shoelaces or not. And they end up playing Sergio Romero in goal.
Yeah.
A bloke who'd not played a league game since January. He looks eerily like tequila salesman Turtle from Entourage. And actually had quite a good game.
Yeah, but he did have a good game. And everybody thought Sam Johnstone was going to play. That was we were prepared, Rog, with our notes from the insiders at NBC that it's going to be then. That was Romero in the end.
It was, and we didn't expect Romero. We didn't expect Spurs to start so well. They've actually had a very un-Spursy off-season. There's been few new, eclectic, overpriced mishmash faces turning up. This has become a club less focused on cracking the top four with a manic kind of sense of a labradoodle let off its leash in the park, more interested in slow build to glory. And they're all about kind of timing their peak, and that peak must come by the time they move into the newly renovated White Hart Lane in 2018.
Yeah.
The highlight of the match may have actually taken place in the tunnel before the game.
Oh my God, the stare-off. Well, it wasn't really a stare-off. It was really just Harry Kane.
Real Madrid's Harry Kane.
Lusting over Wayne Rooney, staring at him in a way that I've not seen anybody ever observed in a tunnel before. And I've been in some tunnels, Rog.
You're normally grinding against something when you stare at somebody like that. He was standing a foot behind Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
It was like he wasn't staring at him as much as contemplating his own future.
Yeah.
It's like Katniss Everdeen first encountering the drunken Haymitch in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Realising the horror of what she was to become.
Hmm.
After that, that was the real highlight of the game because it was a slow burner, David. United are meant to control the game through their midfield, this setup.
Yeah.
The control of Carrick, the kinetic energy of Schneidlin, besides Memphis and Mata, Eminem.
Yeah.
But it was actually Kane, Eriksen and Chadli who conjured menace early.
Oh, very good. Fifth minute, Rog. A fantastic chance for Tottenham to go into the lead. Kane puts a wonderful little 58-degree flop wedge right onto the boot of Christian Eriksen. Got it over Romero. Lopped it over.
Flapping.
Exactly, but put it over the bar, unfortunately. The game would have been so different had they converted that one,
Rog. It would have, but as you saw that, you realise Spurs were so on top. It could only mean one thing.
Yeah.
United had to score in chronic, heartbreaking fashion.
Yeah.
And the goal when it arrived came courtesy of two Spurs errors.
Yeah.
First, Benteleb was sloppy in possession. United broke down the right.
Yeah.
And then Kyle Walker got ensnared in Rooney's back hair and prodded the ball home. Welcome back, crap goals.
Yeah. Ashley Young with the cross into the box. I wonder if Rooney looked like he was going to finish it. So maybe we're being a little harsh on Kyle Walker. But Kyle Walker, another very good own goal finish.
Yeah, at Sheer Rush. Power tweeted us to say DeAndre Yedlin would not have scored that.
Yeah.
Oh, but oh, Spursiness, how we've missed you. And that was it. Suddenly felt game over. Mm-hmm. Spurs were like a boxer, cold cocked on the chin. It was as if the goal served as a reminder to United players, hang on a minute, this is just Spurs.
Yeah.
And Carrick stepped up, started to run the game. And though they toiled with little penetration, United actually looked less like 11 best friends, more like 11 talented blokes on a first date.
Yeah.
Memphis laboured. My game notes just say, Blint's man bun makes him look like an Avram Glazer wannabe. And United did not record a single shot on goal. Until the 65th minute, it was their only shot of the game.
In my power rankings of the players, which I like to do, Rog, at the end of the game, my power rankings, Chris Smalling, for me, was the best Manchester United player on the field, which is really saying something.
But their most emotional high point, I think, Dave, for United fans, 60th minute, who came onto the field?
Schweinsteiger!
Bastian Schwing.
Yeah.
As I said on the TV show, he is the greatest German sub since Das Boot.
Das Boot.
And it was a moment of odd emotion. I kept trying to think, what do Bayern fans feel? Mm-hmm. They've spent so many years loving Schweini.
Yeah.
And hating United.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been an unbelievably...
Well, number one, I don't think they're watching the Premier League. But number two, I doubt they care. Their team is still very, 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 very good.
I'd say his fitness and impact of Schweini is going to be one of the storylines.
Yeah.
Of the early season. That was it, though, Dave. Sometimes football is...
a bit crap.
Yeah. By and large, this was a game that just made me miss the Women's World Cup.
Real
football
the end of the
with
game,
black pellets.
Yeah. Louis van Gaal even looked a little bit sheepish at the end of the game, like, oh, God, we weren't very good.
But it was his 64th birthday.
Yeah.
I imagine he celebrated on some kind of 24-hour Hannah Horvath-style coke fuel bender.
At Wings.
We'll say happy birthday to a man who is going to win or lose... be the focal point this season.
Without a doubt.
Expect this to be a year in which the pressure mounts, the expectation kicks in, the patience wears off.
Yeah.
You can't read too much into one game. But I have to say, if you don't, you just don't retain your place as English football's largest global brand when you play a dire football for three straight seasons. It's going to be a lot less patience with that kind of performance this year. And for Spurs fans, first sad nap of the season is always the least refreshing sad nap of all.
Yeah, I still think Spurs look pretty good. I still think they look like a good team. And I like the fact that they seem to know each other. They really seem to like each other. They really seem to be on each other's wavelength. I think Manchester United are going to be a very tough team to break down this season. I think they have improved defensively, and it's certainly going to be tough to break down at Old Trafford.
A lot of you wanted to know why United were wearing black armbands.
Yeah.
They were marking the passing of
Neville Neville, Rog.
Gary and Phil Neville's magically named father, who died of a heart attack in the week before the game. Neville Neville, close friend of Sir Alex Ferguson. He actually played a key role in developing the class of 92. His sons, Beckham, Scholes and the like. Also the subject of one of the greatest football chants of all time. Sung whenever Gary and Phil would take the field at Old Trafford, borrowing the tune of David Bowie's Rebel Rebel. It goes, Neville Neville, your future's immense. Neville Neville, you play in defence. Neville Neville, like Jacko, you're bad. Neville Neville is the name of your dad.
Well,
he'll be missed.
He will be missed, certainly, Rog. Okay, down to London. Arsenal, 0. West Ham, 2.
Let's read that again, David.
I'm going to read that again, just in case I made an error.
Surely the telex has got a typo.
Arsenal, 0. West Ham, 2. It definitely says that, Rog. The Irons begin the Slaven Bilic era by putting 2 past new Arsenal goalkeeper Petacek. Okay, I've got to say that without laughing. By putting 2 past new Arsenal goalkeeper Petacek. In the 43rd minute, Cheko Kouyaté nodded home a Dimitri Payet free kick to give West Ham a 1-0 lead. Mauro Zárate added a second in the 57th minute, beating Cech near post from 20 yards, Rog.
Oh, after the euphoria of the Community Shield victory, Premier League always bound to feel like a second-rate hangover for Arsenal, right, Davey? And all the talk about Wenger and his more pragmatic approach and Arsenal's first title possibility since 2004. This was meant to be the year of death to useless beauty, Davey. It was meant to be a season of winning football. Expectations at invincible levels didn't start too well.
It didn't, but Arsenal, you know, I saw the team sheets at the beginning of the game. West Ham, name a 16-year-old.
16 years and 237 days.
Reece Oxford, a young man, according to reports, told by Arsenal as a kid that he would never make it. He's in the team. I look at the teams at the start and I think Arsenal are a significantly better football team. They've played so well in calendar 2015. They've dominated the preseason, Rog. And yet, this team, when it comes down to it, you can't just win the league by being the best football team in it. You have to go out and actually win the league, Rog. You've got to win the league by winning the games and being mentally tough enough to do so.
Oh, talking about Reece Oxford, Davey. I mean, what a deep-end debut at the Emirates. Seventh youngest player in English Premier League history. Don't know about you, Davey, but when I was 60, I was too preoccupied with my mags to be making my debut for Everton.
Yeah.
The other big surprise selection.
Yeah.
By the way, the benefit of fielding 16-year-olds,
yeah,
they're too young to remember Arsenal when they're actually a great team.
Mm-hmm.
So Reece Oxford would probably play with no fear.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually terrific, composed, competent. Just think how good
simple,
he's going to be.
Kept it simple.
Just think how good he's going to be when he actually goes through puberty. The other big surprise selection, Olivier Giroud picked by Wenger rather than Theo Walcott through the middle. This was against West Ham song, Big Sam.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team that play with great width, playing Giroud up the middle. Arsenal, not a team without Walcott that have that same kind of width. But still, West Ham going into this were predicted to be cannon fodder under Slaven Bilic.
Yeah.
The hair, the horror. He looks like a Republican presidential nominee. Mm-hmm. His hair is actually a synonym to the word Giroud. But he had his West Ham playing coiled on the break. Arsenal were all movement and passing. Mm-hmm. And in key moments, their triangles were equilateral when they needed to be isosceles. And Arsenal rules kicked in, Davey.
Mm-hmm.
When they look like they're in command, they concede.
Yeah.
Stroke of half-time. A set piece. Peter Cech.
From a foul on Reece Oxford, Rog.
Peter Cech flapping, or technically Chesneying at the ball.
Yeah.
As the Arsenal defence turned off all around him.
Yeah.
And Kayati with a finish.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel at that second?
Well, it was really... Let's not ignore the ball from Payet as well, Rog. He was the player of the entire game for West Ham. The best player on the field in this game. Fantastic ball. I think my first reaction when that happened was like, what? I've never seen... I've watched every Chelsea game in last 10 years, probably. I've never seen Cech miss a ball from a set piece or a cross. Now, most of the time, in truth, Chelsea's defenders tend to get their heads on a ball. He doesn't have to come that far for it. And actually, I'm not just criticising the Arsenal defenders. It's very clear in the replay that he is calling for it, that he does call keeper
you can hear him.
And comes for the ball. But it's just not a goal I've ever seen him concede.
I can only think that Peter Cech is just not used to playing in a nice, well-mannered, functional locker room.
Yeah,
there's no stress for him, so there's no pressure.
All with zonal marking.
He's off his toes when there's no John Terry cracking towels at naked bottoms and doling out the wedgies.
Yeah,
it's just no stress.
Yeah.
As a result, peak Arsenal already in mid-season form, as is your favourite phrase.
Yeah.
It would get worse.
For Arsenal, it happens again and again and again.
They started
second
a pummel West Ham, which is a sign for them to go 2-0 down.
Yeah.
And Zarate, the scorer.
Zarate, of all people. Zarate, a player famous for shooting wide and over the goal from almost anywhere. At will, he shoots wide and over. But a fantastic strike from him. But not so good. You wouldn't think that Cech would save it. Cech, static on the line. Seemed to be moving almost the wrong way.
He was playing like a man who plunged his life savings into shares in a company that manufactures sleeper agent Peter Cech t-shirts. Though, in fairness,
yeah.
If he was playing for Chelsea, there would have been five Chelsea defenders throwing themselves at the ball like FBI bodyguards in the line of fire.
Yeah, slash fish. They would have been on the ground squirming, trying to stop
trying to
that
do
ball.
Like NHL puck stops.
Yeah.
At Didymus tweeted us, is there a coincidence that Peter Cech and Peter Baelish are both named Peter? They're both masters of hiding their true loyalties. When I watch this, a line from a Larkin poem I love captured the emotions that I believe many Arsenal fans experienced when that second goal went in. He's coming. Be careful. Pretend to be dead. Instead, all we could hear were West Ham fans singing, "Are you watching Allardyce?" I'd guess Sam Allardyce was not watching, Davo, because pies don't eat themselves.
Very true.
But why were Arsenal so feeble in front of the goal?
Well, it's first of all to say on the second goal for Cech, like, Chelsea fans have seen that before. There have been times when Cech has, over the past 2-3 years, has lacked that sort of explosiveness of him standing start, and he's been beaten off a long ball and barely made a dive for it. The first goal was something more peculiar. You know what? It's tough to know with Arsenal. They played scintillating football in the preseason. They're still, don't get me wrong, they are a fantastic football team full of fantastic footballers, but they did not show up to play on day one. I know that everybody would be thinking, Chelsea, they were awful too. They played against Swansea, and we'll get to Chelsea. We'll go and deal with this, but this is not a good loss day one of the season in a London derby. This really says something to teams who are going to come to the Emirates for the rest of the season. Oh, you know what? We can go and take them. We can go and take them down there. And they're going to have to do something. They don't need 100 more players. They don't need a different tactical lineup. They don't need anything. They just need to show more mental toughness, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, after the game, Arsene Wenger called his team nervous. And if they were nervous about kicking off the season, it doesn't augur well, say, if they manage to get a 2-point lead and there's 3 games to go. But poor Arsene Wenger on the Arsenal bench. His face, the picture of agony and angst. Toby Flenderson levels, panic face. Looking at him, you're trying to work out what is going on in his head, Dave. Can Gedeon Zelalem play in goal? Oh, we're just 3 points off the top, though, lads. I imagine that's what he said in the locker room. But really, in his heart, is it next year, Arsenal fans? Is it next year already? I don't think so. I think there's no need for panic. I tell you, it was a start to file under suboptimal. But there's so much football still to be played. The transfer window still open. The Giroud-Walcott competition seems to be undermining the confidence of both blokes rather than making them rise to the challenge. Arsenal, in general, they seem to have all the calm of polar explorers who've set off on an expedition and found out quickly they've left a crucial piece of equipment at base camp.
And they certainly missed Alexis, Rog. When he came on at the end of the game, he looked their best player, and he's barely trained with the team yet, Rog. He looked very fantastic. And I actually think they also missed Danny Welbeck. Danny Welbeck, not for his offensive capabilities, but there is an offensive player who tracks back and defends. And it's something that again and again and again, when I watch Arsenal, I just don't see many of their offensive players really doing. Aaron Ramsey, a player who's become so good, almost invisible, almost anonymous in this game, Rog.
Yeah, the Arsenal's predilection should not obscure just how good a performance it was by West Ham.
Yeah, fantastic.
Tactically, organisationally, as you said, Dimitri Payet, the new signing from Marseille, immense. The defensive play, Winston Reid.
Oh, he was giant.
All round formidable.
Yeah.
Tweet from @AFrumanCB. If Mark Noble married Cher, would her name be Cher Noble?
That's rude. It would be, that would be a choice. That would be a good name, Rog. Okay, across London, this was the late game on Saturday. Chelsea 2, Swansea 2, Rog. A resolute Swans side. I think that's something we're going to be saying for the rest of the season. They earn a point off the defending champs at Stamford Bridge. The game's pivotal moment came in the 52nd minute when Chelsea keeper Thibaut Courtois was sent off for taking down Bafétimbi Gomis inside the area. Gomis coolly converted the penalty pass backup keeper Azumir Begovic. Swansea become the first side to score twice at Stamford Bridge in the league since they did so last September, but they lost that game.
Finally, Davo, over the weekend, a game of power, pace and positivity. Mm-hmm. Fascinating to see both teams, Swansea included in this, set up to go for it. And from the outset, Costa and Gomi took it in turns to fling themselves at the opposition's defence.
Yeah.
Right from there, I love the Costa reaction to the penalty not given in the 15th minute.
Yeah.
At P. Newman 85 tweeted us to say, despite missing most of pre-season, Diego Costa's temper tantrum game, mid-season form already.
Yeah.
Why is it with the Chelsea haircuts, Davey?
Yeah, by the way, I could see why Costa believed he was fouled there. It was such an amazing tackle. I believe that was Fernandez. Such an amazing tackle. I don't think that Costa would have known, because he did take the man too after he took the ball. I don't think he would have known that
he handles it so reasonably.
he does, like a three-year-old child.
Cesc, Diego and Falcao now look like triplets.
Yeah.
Diego looks more and more like Crispin Glover in Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
What do you get when you cross Diego Costa and Crispin Glover? Jazzed lovers.
That's very, very good. I wish he was on the Crispin Glover diet. It's all I can say.
What impressed me in this game, how Swansea took every punch on the chin.
Yeah, they took every punch on the chin. They reacted really, really well. I think you'd have to say as well that they had the best player on the pitch in Montero. They had the second best player on the pitch in Ayew. They had the third best player on the pitch in Gomis. In some ways, I can't believe they didn't win it, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, the second half, Swansea stormed out with the speed of Montero blistering Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And the penalty, Davo, Courtois. To me, dictionary definition of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, seeing as Gary Cahill was involved in it.
Yeah.
Very un-Chelsea. Confusion. Mm-hmm. Disarray. Azumir Begovic, poor guy. He hadn't signed on for this. Mm-hmm. Signed on just to draw an enormous paycheck whilst rotting away in obscurity on the Chelsea bench.
Yeah.
And on he trotted. Gomi slapped the ball past him and then did the Katie Ledecky tribute, # summer of women's sports. And you marvel at Swansea, this striker production line that goes back to Meachew and Wilfred Bony. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at this team and just say, is there any in the Premier League that has such stability, a vision, planning? I've got to say, Gomi has Chelsea third string striker written all over him.
Yeah, I think he's too good for them at this point. This was a fantastic performance by Swansea. Really enjoyed watching them play football. I thought that finish by Ayew was just fantastic. He is going to score tons and tons of goals in the Premier League if he shows that level of tenacity, Rog, and inventiveness in front of goal.
Pace, power and intelligence. Swansea will threaten every team in this league. But how do you feel as a Chelsea fan? I mean, they were impressive with 10 men.
Okay,
they scored two crappy goals and were dominated for long spells at home by Swansea City.
Okay, I'll do the positive very briefly and then we'll get into the negative, which is way larger. The positive is that once they went down 10 men, I thought they were fantastic. That is the mental toughness, which is why Chelsea will not cede the league. Somebody is going to have to beat them in the league this season. They will not cede it because they will be that mentally tough.
They went down to 9 when they brought Falcao on.
Yeah, exactly. But they played an 8, and we'll get to the Eva Canaros, Jose Mourinho round a bit. But it was a fantastic performance, and the way they toughed out, and they got a point out of that game when everybody over Twitter was just saying, oh, you are F now, Davo. You're going to lose. You're going to get smashed.
That's not my accent.
No, that was mostly Arsenal fans. They held on, did very well for 2-2. Here are Chelsea's problems. They have no speed on the flanks. Dave Azpilicueta, very, very solid player, not super fast. He was skinned again and again and again down the side. Cannot defend one-on-one. Chelsea rely on immense amounts of help coming from Matic, particularly Mikel, Ramirez, Willian, various people are meant to help out in defence. Willian is weaker at that, and that's what led certainly to at least one of the goals. Montero on Ivanovic. Ivanovic, a great Premier League player, arguably the best right back because he scores, he does so many things, he assists, he does so many things in the game. But at the back, he is getting slower by the game right now, and it's going to be very, very tough for them with how little speed they have in the flanks. Their centre
back partnership is aging. And by partnership, I mean John Terry. Gary Cahill, I've said this before.
My mate John Terry.
Yeah, your mate John Terry. John Terry is aging. He cannot continue to perform at the same level as he has week after week after week after week in yet another season. Can he? And Gary Cahill, he seems to be at his best when John Terry is telling him what to go and do. There's not a lot of inventiveness. There's not a lot of squad rotation. There aren't players. Eden Hazard, once again, not particularly scintillating in a game that you feel that he's set up to go dominate. Oscar played well.
Would you rather be United 3 points or Chelsea 1 point after this performance?
Chelsea, without a doubt, because they're mentally tough. The players know each other. Mourinho knows exactly what the game plan is. The players know what the game plan is. But it is a limited game plan. Chelsea are a limited squad, and they're going to compete in four competitions this year over multiple countries, and it's going to be very, very hard for them to do at the elite
level. I would rather be Chelsea
too.
A fighting point against Swansea, a team against whom a point is not to be sniffed at.
Yep.
In the bag, United, a work in progress, it remains to be seen. But an odd press conference by Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
One of many, many curious and odd ones. But this was odd in a way we've not seen in a while. I mean, he had a chance to conjure his us against the world scenario, which he so loves.
No, it's too early in the season for that.
Instead, he went off on Eva Canero.
Yeah.
Who is as close to Cecil the Lion
yeah,
as the
Lady Physio.
Can. You don't take on Eva Canero, but he did. Why did he, David? Reports now that Eva Canero, wildly popular with the Chelsea faithful, set to be axed from Chelsea's bench, demoted, will not travel to training sessions, games, or enter the players' hotel. What is it all about?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a story because it's Jose Mourinho and because this is Lady Physio. I think at any other club with any other manager, this altercation, this disagreement, this disciplinary action, frankly, between a manager and the team doctor, it wouldn't even make news. Look, I think this is ridiculous that this story has become so big. I think Jose Mourinho should have avoided that question in the post-match interview. And the fact that this has gone out into the public seems crazy for a team to go and do. However, I do agree that when that medical team ran on the field with a man down already before a set piece, it was something that you feel like the manager himself should be in charge of. And I think that's his point, that the medical team should not be running on in that situation. A lot of times, like when the medical team run on, I go, oh no, they're going to have to take him off. We're going to lose a player. Particularly when you're a player down, you just routinely don't see that happen.
I've got to say, to me, it was a targeted shot from the Mourinho playbook, because almost every single headline on Sunday morning, instead of Chelsea labour at home against Swansea, Eden Hazard goes missing, it was Mourinho takes shot at medical team. Another headline, Eva Canero draws Mourinho's ire. So instead of rusty Chelsea overwhelmed by Swansea, we've got a very different news story, which he now has to manage because she is wildly popular. And if I was Arsene Wenger, David, I would put in a multi-million dollar bid for Eva Canero right now. Could be even more important for the club than Karim
Although,
Benzema.
Although, what if she's another secret agent, Rog, and this is all staged just in order to have Arsenal put in the bid for Eva Canero, and then it all goes very
Arsene
wrong.
Arsene Wenger's watched the Americans. He knows what time it is.
Jack Wilshere might be even more injured, even more frequently, if she goes over there, Rog.
There's a lovely moment in this game where Graeme Lasso talked about Ki Sung Jung coming off. He said he's walking off gingerly there. And because he was talking to Arlo, he said, no pun intended. And Arlo just goes, I walk gingerly every day, Graham.
Yeah.
And then laughed, reinforcing a truth that it's not racist when gingers make a ginger joke.
The performance of week one, Rog, was at the Hawthorns,
West Bromwich,
nil. City 3. Raheem Sterling's debut was overshadowed by the tall, small combo of Yaya Toure and David Silva. The smash-and-grab Toure looked good again, Rog, tallied in the 9th and 24th minutes, while Silva bobbed and weaved slightly through the baggies' defence. Vincent Kompany headed home a third goal in the 59th minute. After week one, City sit atop the table.
Resplendent. Welcome back, routine, predictable wins. I've missed you. Welcome back, a fit and mentally focused Yaya Toure.
Yeah.
Oh, and welcome back, a precise and rested David Silva.
Yeah.
A few players I enjoy watching more in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And Raheem Sterling, yes, you were adequate. But this was a romp.
I thought he was better than that.
It was fine. It was a romp for City.
He's going to be very good for
City,
Rog.
It was a romp. They have so many ways to hurt opponents. Yeah. That's what was fascinating about watching them. Mm-hmm. It was a romp there. Tony Pulis, after the game, put his hand up and took full blame for the team's failure. He said, "I take responsibility for the way we set up, the fact we had Sayedo and Ricky Lambert, poor Ricky Lambert. They played really well together, but it pulled us away from what we should do."
Yeah, they were so outnumbered in midfield.
Full responsibility. A time of transition at West Brom. We've confirmed the signing of Venezuela international Salomon Rondon.
Oh.
For a club record fee, 18 million. Everyone is splashing the cash apart from one team that plays in blue that we'll talk about soon. He joins, according to a great Guardian piece by Jonathan Wilson, as a direct result of a new Russian government law mandated by Vladimir Putin,
mm-hmm.
who is anxious to limit the number of foreign players allowed on Russian teams in an attempt to boost Russia's soft power profile mm-hmm. by improving the quality of their domestic footballers. In other news, David.
He's Russian Trump.
Manuel Pellegrini.
Yeah.
Signed a new Manchester City contract until 2017.
Yes.
One way to erase the lame duck stigma
mm-hmm.
is to pretend that you're going to keep him until 2017. Yeah,
I know, there's nothing as secure as a manager contract in the Premier League.
Yeah,
Rog.
Gives Pellegrini the patina of permanence with the players. Although he's probably the only person that believes it will last in 2013. He'll still be fired at the end of the season unless they win the Premier League.
Stoke 0. Philip Coutinho won. Sorry, Liverpool won. An 86th-minute blast from Coutinho sees Liverpool and the Brodge. It was all the Brodge, Rog. Past the Potters after losing at the Britannia. 6-1 on the final day of last season. Distant memory.
Yeah, that spectre of the damning 6-1 thrashing all dissipated. But this was a game that was harder to look at than Brett Baier. I kept watching this game. I kept thinking, where is Stevie G watching? How is Stevie G watching from LA?
It was very early over in LA when this game was on, I think.
I imagine him just sitting there, lolling maybe, with a martini in Robert Evans' mansion.
Yeah.
With Brett Ratner.
Yeah.
Mariah Carey.
Yeah, Miranda, in that little pool house.
Yeah. Miranda Kerr. They were like lying down bored on banquettes beside him as he said, "Turn the volume up, Robert."
Yeah.
"Turn it up."
Yeah.
What was a bigger shock for Liverpool fans, do you think? Seeing the team take the field, A, without Stevie G.
Yeah.
Or B, wearing jerseys which were not war crimes against design and aesthetics.
Yeah.
For the first time in several seasons.
Yeah, maybe, but they look kind of cool in their away kit.
I'll tell you what was cool.
Yeah.
These are my first half game notes.
Yeah.
Two words.
Mm-hmm.
Crop circles.
Oh, it just needed some boxwood hedging, Rog. And that centre circle would have looked fantastic. Needed a bit of boxwood. Roses. Could have been a formal garden.
Who is mowing the centre circle grass at the Britannia?
Who isn't mowing the centre circle at the Britannia, Rog?
I'm wondering
if that is intricate work.
Is it fairies or the devil?
It needed a flag in the middle.
Fairies or the devil?
Yeah.
The
it
grass
was like
work.
A fox graphic on a green.
The grass work was fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. I think their whole plan was to try and get Brendan Rodgers to have acid flashbacks to his college days.
Mm-hmm.
Stoke were competent.
Mm-hmm.
They resemble a Barcelona outlet store in some distant, slightly dumpy mall in May.
Yeah.
Affolay looks so hungry.
Oh, he looks good, Affolay.
He was at the heart of most of Stoke's death moments.
Sexy Stoke.
Yeah, well, as sexy as any team can be when Charlie Adam is pulling the strings,
mm-hmm.
when Charlie Adam looks like he's installed a chocolate fountain in his house over the summer.
Oh, the Golden Corral! I'd love a chocolate fountain from Golden Corral. Why can't we get them as a sponsor, Rod? Golden Corral, have you seen that chocolate fountain? Oh, I'd love one of those. I can picture Charlie Adam under it with his mouth open just drinking from that.
David, I've never seen you more because you've just turned into Augustus Gloop.
I would love a Golden Corral chocolate fountain.
Liverpool, five new signings unfurled throughout the game. Lack of cohesion and result. It may come, mm-hmm. but for one day, they're a bit long ball United trying to work out how to get the best out of Benteke within their system. They normally play the ball through the middle. Benteke crave service from the flanks. There was not a lot of service from the flanks in this game. That is going to be fascinating to see if they can adjust. But just when it seemed like the only person in America who could actually be enjoying this game was Don Garber, Emre Can came on.
Yeah.
Gave Liverpool a new momentum, turned the game around, 86th minute.
Well, Brodge was just about to substitute off Coutinho. He was literally preparing the sub.
No, I was motivating the
lad. No. He was preparing a sub. He was preparing to take him off. And Coutinho... We've seen him do it before, Rog. An absolutely fantastic pinpoint laser strike.
Tiny Brazilian cannon.
Oh, good goal.
Oh, it was a thunderous moment of skill. Uh-huh. Stood out all the more for the 89 minutes of dross that surrounded it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say Stoke goalkeeper Jack Butland. Many Americans think he's named after one of the world's most underappreciated amusement parks.
Butlands. Even that took me a while to get that one, Roger.
Butland.
Anyway, Butland. Oh, yeah. I see. I thought it was a Butlands reference.
Yeah, that's great. I hadn't thought about Butlands.
Butland would be amazing.
Oh, it's fun for all the
It's family. Not as good as the Golden Corral.
Butland.
But it's Butland is good. Okay.
He could have done better.
Yeah.
But Liverpool have signed so many new players. It seems clear, though, LA Galaxy's Philip Coutinho remains their best. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of goal, Davo. Makes you wonder, why aren't there more goals like that in football?
No, there should be more goals like this. Phil Jagielka can do it.
Why don't games end up like American League designated hitter scores, 12-7 or 18-15?
Yeah.
I honestly do not know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But Liverpool fans chanted their faithful poetry in motion song. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately for much of the game, the poetry was the kind that Kristen Stewart writes that's published in Marie Claire.
Yeah.
Your nature perforated the abrasive organ pumps. As for Stoke, the fantasy football transfers keep coming. Xherdan Shaqiri has just signed for them.
Oh, sexy, sexy
stuff. From Inter Milan, they are clearly thirsty for the Europa League, David.
Yeah. Talking of the Europa League, Rog, Southampton, they go up to Newcastle. It's a 2-2 draw, a thumping header from $22.5 million summer signing Jorginho Wijnaldum looked to be enough for Steve McLaren to secure a win in his Tyneside debut. But a 79th minute goal from substitute Shane Long, Rog, sees the Saints snatch a point. Fantastic game of football, this.
Yeah,
really good.
And one of the joys of the weekend.
Yeah.
Watching Newcastle's new manager, Steve McLaren.
Yeah.
In the stands, on his phone. His phone from the 1980s.
Yeah.
Probably on the other end of the phone, John Carver giving him tips, giving him the insight of the greatest Premier League manager of all time.
Good call.
But his team, even though Steve McLaren is such an object of mirth, that haircut,
yeah,
that tuft, mm-hmm, at the beginning that makes him think, he thinks, we think, he thinks, we think, he thinks he's not bald.
Yeah, that umbrella in the rain in that awful European Championship qualifying loss against Croatia, Rog. We can never forgive him for that.
Oh, but his team, they're already playing more ambitious football than we've seen in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, that debut thumper, Davo, my goal of the weekend.
Oh, well, not just for the goal and the finish, but Obertan's run down the right wing. He looked like he was not a robot a second.
Not just a run.
Yeah, human. He looked like a human being with two legs running.
He made a cross.
And he made a cross that hit the head of one of his teammates. Wijnaldum. It was amazing.
What a thumper. We think of Newcastle as French Neuve Chateau.
Yeah.
But in this game, they became the first team in Premier League history, mm-hmm, to have five Dutch players take the field.
Yeah.
They're actually Neuf Castile.
Oh, Neuf Castile.
As LVG will back us up. Southampton. Yeah. Look like a team that may become the 2075th club to have their ambitions halted by a Europa League hot pursuit. Mm-hmm. West Ham, they got themselves purposefully eliminated last week from the Europa League and beat Arsenal. Southampton manfully fielded an almost first-string side midweek and look like they are paying the price.
They almost won at the final seconds. Mane had a shot. I think everybody in the stadium, including him, believed it was going in. Anyway, good to see Newcastle start the season with a point. Very, very good game of football, Rog. Leicester 4, Sunderland 2. Another cracking game of football. The Foxes pick up right where they left off, putting 4 past a hapless Sunderland. Goals from Jamie Vardy, Mark Albrighton, and 2 from Algerian Riyad Mahrez. Give Leicester their 6th win in the last 7 league games at the King Power Stadium. Welcome back, Claudio Ranieri, Rog.
Just 37 more games till victory. It's Leicester City's title to lose, Davo.
It's true, Rog.
Whoa, it's the last 10 games. I think they've scored 23 goals, conceded 9, and got 25 points. Mm-hmm. They should get some kind of a trophy for that, Leicester City. What a thrilling performance for me, the man of the week, Mark Albrighton.
Yeah.
2 assists, 1 goal from a man whose partner's mother was killed in the Tunisian terrorist attacks over the summer. He talked to the media after the game with words of life wisdom. He said, you look at life and everything in a different light, in a different way. You think about what is important and what is not important. What a bloke. I could not be more thrilled for him. But Sunderland, my God, is it possible to be relegated on the first day of the season?
Yeah. Dick Advocaat goes home, turns on regrets. I've had a few. It's going to be a long season for Sunderland, I fear, Rog. Norwich 1, Palace 3. This might have been the game of the weekend, Rog. Goals from Wilfried Zaha, Damien Delaney and debutant Johan Kabay in a Palace shirt, Rog. See Alan Pardew's men passed the Canaries at Carrow Road. Super Alan Pardew, and he was quite excited about this, Rog, has now won 11 of his 19 games in charge of the Eagles.
It's fantastic. I mean, Palace were swashbuckling. Pace and width. Mm-hmm. Norwich definitely hard done to. Cameron Jerome had an equaliser ruled off for a high foot.
Yeah.
Harsh decision. Palace quickly doubled their pain by adding a third through Kibai, who punished some sloppy defending. But congratulations to Alan Pardew, Davo. Life is amazing. This time last year, he was being humiliated at Newcastle. Now, with this win, he's matched the most number of victories a Crystal Palace boss has ever had in the Premier League, even though it's just his 19th game in charge.
Amazing, amazing stuff, Rog. Bournemouth, 0.
Up the cherries!
Villa, not yet, Rod, 1. A 72nd-minute header from substitute Rudy Gusted sees a very tan Tim Sherwood collect all 3 points at the Vitality Life Stadium, Rog. Gusted cost Villa just more than $9 million from Blackburn Rovers.
Oh, Bournemouth, how we love you. You are the CONCACAF of Premier League teams.
Yeah.
A team for those charmed by Seabiscuit, by the Mighty Ducks, by Cool Runnings.
Or by Burnley last season.
Yeah, they were very Burnley in their advertising hoardings. At not Chris Wachal tweeted us to say, new best ad at a Premier League ground. Bournemouth, pre-owned watch specialist. Hashtag RIP Fishwick minibus rental.
Yeah.
We love the dog advertising.
Oh, I thought it was a real dog. I think everybody, John Green was caught out, thought it was a real dog. We thought it was, I certainly thought it was a real dog.
I thought it was Brian Griffin. I thought it was a Cherries fan.
Yeah.
I would love to be in that creative meeting for that advertising hoarding. Mm-hmm. How do we create an ad that will become an instant football cult classic?
Fake dog.
I bet you went like, before they got to fake dog, David, yeah. I bet they were like, silence for a minute, and then like one guy was like, huge breasts.
No.
And they were like, no, we can't do it, this kid.
It's one of those meetings. I've been in those meetings.
Huge penises. No. Normal sized breasts. Somebody showed up in the back, and then they were like, cats, dog. That's how it went. Huge breasts, huge penises, normal breasts, cats, dog.
I've been in those meetings. You've got a lot of this in those meetings. Or you could have, or you could have, or you could have, or you could have, or you could have. And it was a dog. Let's convince people there's a real dog. And it's not actually. You know what the joke is? It's a fake dog that everybody believes is real.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
This photo's group ad. That. I think brilliant, it's absolutely amazing. I say, aside from the hoardings, we talked a lot about them on the show last night, but plenty to be encouraged by. Bournemouth had loads of possession, plenty of chances. Mm-hmm. They miss a sharp focal point up top. But party poopers Aston Villa. That thumping header from Gusted.
Oh, great.
Didn't
finish.
So much as head the ball. He crushed it with his meaty Benin forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Sherwood explained the physics. He said, he's like a moving car. You don't mind standing in front of a part one, but you want to move out the way when it's coming in at 30 miles an hour. That was an old school goal, David.
Mm-hmm. It was an old school goal. Can I just say, welcome back to the Premier League, Micah Richards, one of my favourite Premier League players ever. Came, was very young debutant, almost Rhys Oxford age when he made his debut for Manchester City. His career's gone a little bit wrong, injuries, couldn't get in the team at Manchester City, went to Europe, didn't get a lot of football. Great to see him back. A fantastic performance from him in
Rhys
the centre of Aston
should
wear,
should read his
defense.
Autobiography as a beware story.
Yeah,
but
true.
Worry not, Bournemouth. Eddie Howe is a shrewd tactician.
Yeah.
Please God, this team will evolve. Talking about teams that won't evolve.
Yeah, well, Eddie Howe might want to loosen up on the very, very tight polo shirts. It's going to be very constricting, I think, on his ability to deliver instructions.
It's all part of Bournemouth's niche marketing campaign.
Everton 2. Roger? Remember when we used to just listen to the results on the radio and they would say them and they'd put a dramatic pause? And when you heard Everton 2, you'd think, oh, sounds good. Then it'd be Watford 2. I'd be like, argh.
No, you always knew if it was if Everton had won, they'd say, Everton 2, Watford, and you ordered 3 points. You didn't even have to hear the score.
Oh, no, I think that the guy used to try and trick you
James
after
Alexander
a while.
Gordon,
be like,
no, he
Everton 2, Watford
no, if
2.
You'd go Everton 2, Watford, and you knew then it was 3 or more. And if it was a draw, he'd say, Everton 2, Watford, with exactly the same. Everton 2, Watford, and you immediately knew.
Okay, let me do that again. Everton 2, Watford 2.
No!
New boys, Watford, go to Goodison. They earn a point off Everton. Rog, all yours.
Oh, the toughest thing to watch on USA Network since Royal Pains. Oh, there was blood coming out of there wherever. Watching Everton in that first half.
I cherish women.
What? Watford.
Yeah.
God, they were fearless.
Uh-huh.
Owned by the Pozzo family, who made a fortune in the tool manufacture business.
Yeah.
Yes, in around Udinese. Yes, that Pozzo family.
Yeah.
They brought the local football club Udinese. They then brought Granada in Spain. Uh-huh. And thanks to the economy of scale, they run one
the
of the
city,
most...
The city, Rog, not the team.
Sophisticated and highly regarded scouting operations in all of football. So they got a glut of new signings. It was their old striker, Troy Deeney, who came out and bullied Everton to such an extent that the fans booed the team off at Goodison Park at half-time.
Oh, it doesn't often happen on the first game of the season.
Patience very thin at Goodison Park. Little seems to be changing. See Gareth Barry. Everton were just, they were Vince Vaughan, True Detective bad. We made Watford's yellow jersey look like Dortmund at their peak. Ross Barkley, Jagielka did an equaliser, but then Watford went ahead again through Igalo, Nigerian, who's played for every Pozzo club. He's batted for the Pozzo cycle.
Wow.
Here he schooled Everton. He put John Stones on his backside twice. You can have him. Bamboozled Seamus Coleman to stun Everton. I honestly thought, David, when they went 2-1 ahead, Watford, I thought I was going to have a Dr. Kevorkian-sized sat-nav on the first day of the season. Is that dark?
The kids are still away at camp, though, right, Rog? They didn't have to witness this. Because I was worried that they'd just come back this weekend. God.
Everton then just applied pressure without intelligence. I'd say the last 10 minutes were just an emotional rollercoaster, a season's worth of highs and lows. On trots Kone, maligned, a borderline disaster at Everton. But here he was a game changer. First with an assist, then with a second level, just a class finish. When that ball went in, I felt Jennifer Aniston getting married at last levels of relief. Third season, we've started with 2-2 draw against a crap team.
Yeah.
And so the count begins. 39 more points and we will be free of relegation worries. It's going to be that kind of
Leighton Baines, injured, Rog.
Yeah.
You've got nothing to say. You're speechless.
It is week one in the books. It is dire and dark.
Can I come over and watch this weekend's game with
Southampton
you?
Southampton away.
Yeah. Tough game. It's going to be okay, Rog. Believe in your team. Believe in your squad. Believe.
Up the cherries.
It's all going to be okay. Rog, in an MLS.
Talking about believing in your team.
I still believe in my team. New York Red Bulls 2, NYCFC 0. We're improving against the Red Bulls, Rog. New York Red Bulls and the brothers, Wright Phillips, claim the season's third Hudson River Derby. Who's ever called anything about the New York, the Hudson River something? The Hudson River Derby, defeating a star-laden NYCFC side that included, okay, let's count, Andrea Pirlo, David Villa, Frank Lampard, and Mix. Discord.
David, what an atmosphere.
Yeah.
I have to say, violence before the game.
Oh, yeah.
Sandwich boards hitting men.
Yeah.
Right in front of AP... journalist Rob Harris, who was over from England for the game, he just
who
happened
are,
to catch
yeah,
it on his video.
Are, yeah.
Smoke flares throughout. I kept thinking, sport of the future. Mm-hmm. The moment of the match came before kickoff when the Red Bulls fans lifted up a tifo, proclaiming City retirement home with an image of aging Pirlo and Frank. Brilliant wit from supporters of a team who fielded Roberto Donadini, Lothar Matthäus, Yuri Djorkaeff, Rafael Marquez, Thierry Henry, and Sean Wright Phillips in their time. It's like Meg Ryan laughing at Renee Zellweger's plastic surgery. Yeah, I have to say, peering on a tifo, that was kind of Pirlo and Frank Lampard's greatest contribution to the game. They both laboured so terribly. I'm pretty sure NYCFC have broken lamps. I don't like to jump to conclusions. The terrific Steve Amoya, an Italian football connoisseur behind the Soccer Translator website, he tweeted, I heard the commentator say, another errant pass by Pirlo. No. Another teammate who lacks his understanding and vision of the game. Discuss, David. What is going on?
Saw a slightly different game. I thought it was very competitive. I thought it was very close. I think that, the opening goal turned on a a questionable decision, a foul that could have gone either way, resulted in a set piece. Red Bulls went ahead, and then NYCFC were chasing so hard for an equaliser, they ended up losing 2-0. I thought Lampard, for his first full game in an NYCFC shirt, of course he's worn that shirt for Manchester City several times, Rog, but for his first full game, I actually think he was looked pretty good. I thought he played pretty well. Pirlo, it's not quite the same Pirlo. I'm not quite sure he's got into the speed or the tone or the sense of MLS yet. You get a sense that he's like he's playing in a pub game where he can't quite believe that his team aren't winning.
I remember watching Peter Beardsley, the terrific Newcastle and Liverpool player, visionary passer. He ended his career at Everton. And Everton were terrible then, absolutely terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd watch him and he would consistently pass the ball and it looked like it was just going off his foot out of bounds.
Yeah.
But the honest truth was, he was playing balls into space. and none of his teammates had any understanding of the game that he was playing. He's playing three-dimensional chess. They're all hoof it guys.
Yeah.
And he expected them to be on his level intelligently and run into space.
Yeah.
And so he was just a too great a player on a terrible team. I think that's the case Stephen Moyer was trying to make about Perlo. But you have to say, a couple of corners he hoofed clean out of bounds suggest it's a bit of both that's going on.
Yeah.
He definitely needs to bed in. It was also amazing to see 25,000 fans living and dying with every kick of the rivalry,
yeah,
which I think will brew wonderfully in years to come.
Yeah, definitely. Lampard, definitely, I should say, definitely at fault for the second goal, nutmegged by his opponent.
I want to know who was at fault for the New York Magazine photo spread.
Oh. I mean, they're nice-looking pictures.
Very New York Times photo spread of the US World Cup team in 2002, the Landon Donovan water spigot. It was very Kraftwerk. It's complicated, is all I was. I would love to know. I think it was one of those situations, I would guess, where none of the three players felt comfortable, but they all kept that discomfort inside, and only afterwards did they admit they didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. In the Western Conference of an MLS, Rog, marquee Mexican signing Giovanni Dos Santos, Rog, scored in his LA Galaxy debut as they defeated Seattle 3-1. What's happening in Seattle, Rog? And Hercules Gomez is returning to an MLS. Toronto FC signed the 33-year-old from Tijuana.
One of my favourite US players, glorious career in Liga MX and MLS. I love his quote when he signed, "I've got a huge chip on my shoulder. I don't feel I get the credit I deserve sometimes. It keeps me hungry and keeps me motivated." Good luck, Hercules.
Okay, on to our Ravens, Rog. Our first Raven is from Will Wright, Rog. Mediocre fan of the pod, an American master's student living in the crap part of Brussels. Thanks for your honesty, Will. Listening to your last pod, and in particular the addition of homage to Catalonia to the Emporium, I was reminded of a conversation I had with fellow students during the most recent Champions League final. One was Basque and the other Catalan, and we talked about the legacy of the Spanish Civil War and its impact on football. For them, certain teams are still Republican, your Barcelonas and Sociedads, while others are nationalist, your Atleticos and Espanyols. I know similar divisions from living in Germany and hearing about matches between St. Pauli and Rostock or Dresden, and have read about the implications of Celtic Rangers for the Troubles. My question is, are politics and ideology of fans a legit reason to choose or even divorce a club? I know the old adage about changing your wife, religion, job and politics, but never your football club, and I'm fiercely loyal to my two teams, Borussia Dortmund and Chelsea. I know this is less of a problem in the BPL, but I've always asked myself about the legacy of the Chelsea headhunters or the Paris subway chants last year, and recently saw a video of Liverpool fans chanting about Maggie Thatcher after her death. Is it possible to choose being for or against being in the bourgeoisie army, as Rog said? I know this is very continental, crap and complicated.
See, I mean, first of all, I'd say so many English clubs in the 1980s had appalling politics and were tinged by racism and violence.
Chelsea and Everton
lead among them.
Yeah.
But I'd also say English clubs are far less political or ideological than their Italian or Spanish counterparts because of their origin story.
Yeah.
Almost all of them have their origins in kind of urban settings, working class milieu, rather than in the ideological political affiliation of the Spanish and Italian leagues. Conservatives, traditionally, they even play football. If you're looking historically, they play cricket and rugby. Working classes play footy. And there was a great statistic about the 2015 election in England that 90% of the teams in the Premier League play in areas that are represented by Labour MPs. And I just say about, for Americans, I just say when you pick a side, delve beyond the striker you like or the jersey that you're drawn to and really, really know your team. Do that extra research before you commit and understand exactly what you're getting into.
Yeah, I'm torn because I also think that there's something childlike about choosing a team. And sometimes it's the things that don't require a lot of research. You know what? My history with Chelsea. I just loved the blue shorts that they wore in 1970, 1971 with the thick white stripe down the side. It was as simple as that. They had me. I had a lot of chances. I could have chosen West Ham, could have chosen Charlton, could have chosen Palace. Those were teams that were all nearer to me, Leighton Orient. But I chose Chelsea. Yes, I could go to those games, but it was the blue shorts with the thick white stripe.
I agree it's childlike, but as a child, nothing fascinated me more than the fight against anti-fascism.
Yeah, very, very true. As you drove around handing out leaflets for the Conservative Party with your father.
And also tracking down Nazis.
Yeah, exactly.
Nazi hunting.
Rog Bennett, Nazi hunter. It's a good TV series. We could develop that, Rog.
It's true.
Let's put that on the table.
It's not for television. It's called The True Life.
Let's put that on the table for our future negotiations, Rog. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers poet, philosopher, sucker, scribe, raven of the week is Tom Aragona. What a great name, Rog. Tom Aragona of Stamford, Connecticut. Dear Rog and Davo, a.k.a. Zito and Slytek, I really want to get behind AFC Bournemouth as they're just the kind of rags-to-riches story that
cherries.
People love to pull for. However, there is something stopping me from throwing my full support to them this season. They have the worst club crest slash symbol I've ever seen in any sport. Is it supposed to be a player's head? If so, why does he have an elongated neck? And is that a massive goiter? Not even Beckhamanian dreadlocks can save it, as there are clearly problems in Sector 3.4. To that end, is there any precedent for a club completely changing its crest? That would be the right move here, tradition be damned. As the designers of one of the finest patches ever sewed by the skilled craftsmen of Shaanxi province, would you be willing to take up the cause and create a new crest for the cherries? How about a cherry blossom tree, a bowl of cherries, even a picture of Don Cherry wearing one of his vertigo-inducing suits would be a massive improvement and might encourage Jeremy Roenick to let you start your show on time come the NHL playoffs. Oh, thanks. Brilliant. Brilliant work, Tom Aragona.
How dare you, Tom Aragona. Yeah. The logo actually portrays a Dickie Dowsett header. Of course, Dickie Dowsett, one of the great Bournemouth strikers of the 1960s. And I think they like it in Bournemouth because it seems to symbolise the upward trajectory of the club. But this is a club in transition. I mean, they're in the Premier League right now, but they've charged through in 6 years from League Two. And they're still, if you go there, still a League Two side in many ways in their culture and staffing. I mean, Premier League status, 3 years ago, they'd get 6,000 or 7,000 people watching their games. Mm-hmm. Now they have 400 million people watching around the world. They, 3 years ago, they sold a couple of thousand jerseys locally. Mm-hmm. Now they're selling shirts worldwide, 30,000, 40,000 of them. 3 years ago, they had the local plumber and electrician as their sponsors. Now global brands all want a part of them. And so I think they are transitioning. The logos today, most of the football logos look crap because they're not so much designed for jerseys, but to look good on Twitter and social media. And in half inch, that's why Everton got so much crap when they launched their new, why the US soccer trying to float out new logos, and they look so, why MLS got so much crap for their new logo. But yes, create a new one, because everything in football is fake. I mean, there's nothing real. Bournemouth's red and black jerseys, modelled on AC Milan. They changed their name from Bournemouth to AFC Bournemouth because someone, I think it was Dickie Dowsett, who stopped being their striker, became their commercial director, and had the idea if they were called AFC Bournemouth, they'd always be alphabetized first, no matter what league where they were in. What logo would they create, David, if you were their commercial manager? Well, if you were their Dickie Dowsett?
You've got the Vitality Life dog. Certainly they could charge some money.
People love dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Suttles, the stone specialists who advertise.
The local quarrymongers.
The local quarrymongers. They'd be good.
They had the coolest,
you could have some rocks.
They had the coolest logo in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Some cherries in honour of the club's nickname. Mm-hmm. They actually looked like a ginormous pair of red testicles. What could be cooler than that? Bring that back. If you do have a design for Bournemouth, send it to us. We've got a patch. We've got a series of patches for the best new logo that you can do. We'll do a public service day.
Brilliant, brilliant. Can't wait. Okay, I can't wait for the football next weekend, Rog. And your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA.
Happy motoring.
Wow, what a sound effect, Rog. Friday.
How do you do that?
I project my voice. Yeah. I project it, and it sounds
like a high-performance
mini driving past.
You look like a Nigerian throat singer when you make that noise.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Friday at 2:45 p.m. Eastern, Rog. Man United versus Villa. It's a Friday game. I'm so excited for the Friday game, Rog. Saturday at 7:45 a.m. Southampton versus Everton, not in the face. Sunday at 11 a.m, Rog, a massive game in just week two of the season.
It's bigger than that, David.
It is bigger than that. Manchester City versus Chelsea. All those games on NBCSN and NBC Live Extra.
Come on, Chelsea. Who's going to be the knight who will fight for Eva Canero's honour?
And in an MLS, Seattle Sounders versus Orlando City at 5 p.m. on ESPN2. There are many ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium, Rog, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page. MAB gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book.
Oh.
A truly depressing book. A Little Life.
Shock. What a shock.
A Little Life, a novel by Hanya Yanigara.
Yeah.
I think it reflects my mood at the moment. It's a novel I would never have read unless it was given to me by my mate Peter Mendelssohn. I'd encourage everyone to read it, but with two caveats.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, it's 700 pages long, and I got a migraine just from carrying it around. And two, be warned before you tuck in. It, on the surface, it's about four college mates and their relationships as they attack New York over the course of three decades. But it quickly becomes a book about the legacy of abuse, childhood trauma, physical suffering. It is brilliantly done. It's the kind of book that makes you block out your own life as you become submerged in it. But it's not really for the weak-backed nor the faint-hearted.
Not really for Davo either, Rog, from that description. Okay, Rog, JJ, if you're listening to this, not John Johnson, my daughter JJ, earmuffs right now. I'm putting in, Rog, Alfred's Teach Yourself to Play the Ukulele Complete Starter Pack. Young JJ's 11th birthday coming up this week, Rog. She wants two things. She wants better golf clubs, which I'm getting at, and she wants a ukulele and some ukulele instruction. This is a wonderful kit. On Amazon, Alfred's Teach Yourself. It comes with a soprano ukulele, Rog, and also deluxe accessories, including a custom-fit lightweight gig bag in case she wants to go on some ukulele gigs. It comes with an extra set of clear nylon soprano ukulele strings, and best of all, it has an accompanying audio CD featuring complete demonstration and performance tracks. So she's going to have to listen to that. Oh, and a DVD featuring a professional ukulele instructor.
Please, can she learn songs other than just Under the Rainbow?
I'm going to have her learn the Men in Blazers theme tune, and we'll put that on one of our mixtapes.
She's going to be watching a lot of Israel Kamaki woo-woo-woo-lee videos.
Can't wait for that. Other ways to connect to us. You can now watch entire episodes of our crap TV show, Rog, on NBC Sports Live Extra. This sounds like a terrible idea. Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, meninblazers.com. Also on meninblazers.com, Rog, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner Guinness, and check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. meninblazers.wikispaces.com. That's a wonder of the modern world, Rog. You can follow us on Twitter, at Rog Bennett, at Embassy Davies, and at Men in Blazers on Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies, and we have a Facebook also. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com.
Always, and we try and answer each and every one.
Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
Oh, see you sucker it up.
Abracada, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Six more years.
Yes, and 37 more games, Rog.
Love you, Davey.
Love you too.